listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run, stage 20. Today we are in Plataforma de Gredos.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm on my own at the moment, but I'm going to be joined very soon by Daniel Freeb. And earlier today, I caught up with Orla Shinoe. We'll hear from her later in the episode. We'll also hear the latest rider diaries from James Knox, who had a very dramatic day yesterday and today. And he's sent us in his diary for tonight, and it's quite a listen again. Nick Schultz as well has sent in his diary. We've got some interviews, including with Philippe Gilbert, and yesterday's stage winner, Remy Cavagna. All that to come. And before I'm joined by Daniel, I might as well tell you what happened today. It was stage 20, the Queen's stage, the one that would decide who wins this Vuelta in Madrid tomorrow. 190 kilometres, six climbs from Arenas de San Pedro to Plataforma de Gredos. And we're just sort of west of Madrid here in this mountain range today, Gredos mountain range. And it was pretty stunning, pretty spectacular, and pretty remote, considering it was so close to Madrid. And well, Orla and I will touch on that a little bit later on. But an early break went away. Mark Padun was in it for Barry Morita, another promising young rider. Mitch Docker was there for EF Education First. Steve Morabito of Group AMA, FDJ Mafia man Steve Morabito. That's a reference to our Giro coverage from last year. Damien Howson was there for Mitchell and Scott. We've seen a lot of him. Sergio Henao as well from UAE Team Emirates. And then a little chasing group formed behind those guys. It included Ruben Guerrero from Team Katusha Alpecin with Willie Smith, who's featured in last night's episode, an amazing interview with him. He was helping Guerrero really get up to that group, which he did. Nicolas Edé was there, former red jersey wearer, was there as well. And Teo Gegenhart was another one who was trying to get across. Went at one point with Omar Filey of Astana, and he eventually did get across, and he was very active all day, and in fact won the most combative rider award. As the stage wore on and as the rain began to fall and it got really cold, there were a lot of Astana attacks. Astana were riding very hard in the front, trying to help Miguel Angel Lopez secure a place on the podium. And Jakob Fuglsang was very active. Jon Izaguirre, Luis Leon Sanchez as well, and Omar Fraile. Rain falling very heavily as they began to climb the Puerto de Peña Negra, a long climb, 14 kilometres long. And the five leaders by now who'd formed at the front, Howson, Samitier, Edé, Guerrero and Gegenhart, had just over 2 minutes, but Astana putting a lot of pressure on behind. And one of the effects of that was to reduce Roglic's support. He was left with only George Bennett for help, which was quite surprising for a team that's been so strong in the mountains. It was all for Lopez to attack, and eventually he had a go, a big attack. It sort of dragged away the strongest riders in the race. Roglic was there in the red jersey, Alejandro Valverde sitting second, Nairo Quintana, and Pogacar as well from UAE Team Emirates, Tadej Pogacar. Valverde had a go as well at one point, a couple of attacks, and then Pogacar himself, a big attack with about 40 kilometres still to race on the penultimate climb. Once Pogacar went clear, it was Movistar chasing hard behind, really protecting podium places for Valverde and, more importantly, Quintana. But Pogacar got 1 minute 30, 1 minute 40, and it kind of stayed around that all the way, all up the final climb, up to Plataforma de Gredos, and he won a third stage victory and also got himself up onto the podium, which was a pretty incredible performance from the 20-year-old. So Pogacar won the stage, 1 minute 32 ahead of Valverde, with Micah third, Herman Pernsteiner at Bayern Merida being very consistent. He was fourth on the day, and Roglic was fifth, only conceded about 10 seconds to Pogacar on the day. And on GC, Roglic obviously is still leading, 2:33 ahead of Valverde, with Pogacar up to third from fifth. So he will be on the podium in Madrid. Quintana slips down to fourth, Lopez down to fifth. And another guy just outside the top 10, of course, James Knox, had such a difficult day after his crash yesterday. Ended up 11th overall on GC. Mikel Nievi moved up to 10th. I think Knox missed it by about 21 seconds of top 10, but heroic effort from him, and we'll hear from him later in this episode.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
Thanks very much to Rafa, our title sponsor. You'll hear from the background noise. We've moved inside now. Just a reminder that Rafa will be at the World Championships in Harrogate, Yorkshire, from the 21st to 29th of September. They've got two pop-ups in at the Starling Cafe and also in the Fan Zone, where you can watch the racing, and there are various events going on as well. Check that out at rafa.cc. And I've been joined by Daniel Freve. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Richard.
Quite bustly here, isn't it?
Yeah, very bustly in Avila. It's beautiful, isn't it? I haven't seen all of it yet, but place I've always wanted to come to. Did I say this the other day? Synonymous with Frank Vandenbroek's attack in or stage win in 1999 Vuelta.
Carlos Sastre as well.
Yeah, lived here and was from here. Chava Jimenez, Jose Maria Jimenez, who died in 2004. They both grew up here. Carlos Sastre sort of designed today's stage.
Did he? Wow. Yeah. What did you think of today's stage?
I thought it was another cracking stage. I mean, only one pincho left, Rich.
Fine, I don't want one.
I've gone for, I think it's...
Hell of a pincho, that.
Yeah, it is a big... It's a sandwich, really, with chicken and avocado. This Vuelta has been very dramatic. There have been times when I've felt it's been a bit like an episode of... And I've never watched this programme, but I know what it's about. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. It's like an I'm a GC contender, Get Me Out of Here. And the four... There have been five people in the jungle... And they've been Rog, Pog, Superman, Nairo Man, and Valverde. And you've not been able to escape them. Since the first day, they've been right at the top of the general classification. They've been in the mix zone every day. And at times, it seems as though... Well, they've seemed inescapable. However, a lot has happened in the last week between crashes, beef. And if you were to analyse the whole of this Vuelta... and see how it stacks up against other Grand Tours, the number of days of high drama has been high. You know, we said at the start of the Vuelta, there were a lot of days that looked like they were going to be GC days, but in addition to the GC days, there have been days that we didn't expect to be GC days that turned into them, and also days of assorted controversies, beefs, talking points.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the riders you mentioned there, Miguel Angel Lopez,
Superman.
He is a curious one for me because he's got such a strong team, but I'm not sure. I mean, they make big statements, don't they? And you're expecting a lot. And he made a couple of big attacks today, but ultimately it kind of backfired. And he's not old; he's still a young rider. But there's been this kind of expectation and this responsibility put on him to lead this very strong team, and he doesn't look really like the finished article or like somebody who. Even has that much margin for improvement, perhaps. I'm not sure. He just doesn't seem like a sort of Grand Tour winner in waiting.
No, he doesn't at the moment. He's obviously handicapped by his handicap in time trials, and that will remain the case, you would think, and that limits his options, even though the amount of time trialing has been reduced over the last few years in Grand Tours. But where I have seen him grow is in stature, as a personality, as a leader. I mean, he had his sort of outburst yesterday and retracted it really this morning. But I thought it took a degree of confidence to come out and say the things that he did. And he sort of, you know, his shoulders are... he's sort of thrown his shoulders back and puffed his chest out a little bit this year. And he's, you know, if you talk to people...
Fluttered his cape.
Right, exactly. And if you talk to people in the team, they certainly say that he's... he's a more mature rider and man than he was a year or two ago. You wonder about, you know, Vinokourov and Astana. Vinokourov has this uncompromising reputation. You know, I was standing next to him at the finish today, and he didn't look too enamoured with what he was seeing. And, you know, they've got two Grand Tour leaders at the moment, really, Fuglsang and Superman. But you sense it's a team that wants to be winning Grand Tours. With those two riders, are they gonna win too many over the next couple of years? You would think maybe not. Does that mean that they will, by definition, be on the lookout for one of these other Grand Tour talents that are sort of flourishing, blossoming at the moment? A Pog or Evenepoel, or you know, Bernal is not going anywhere anytime soon. Neither are the others, to be honest. But you do wonder whether he'll start to get itchy feet, Vinokourov.
Pog really did today what Lopez was supposed to do, what the team had set him up to do. You know, Lopez had a couple of goes and ultimately sort of paid for that as well. Whereas Pog, when he went with real decisiveness, he bridged up to Keegan Hart and Guerrero up the road. They couldn't live with him for very long, and 40 kilometres is a long way on roads like that. We know he likes this cold, wet weather, but for a 20-year-old who we wondered whether he could or should last the whole 3 weeks, to put in a performance like that on the penultimate day, I thought it was pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, in these cases, we usually say we've run out of superlatives, but it's not so much that we've run out of superlatives, it's that superlatives are redundant, really. I mean, the evidence is before everyone's eyes. We all know that we've not seen this before. And, you know, as he grows in confidence as well, the margin of his victories is increasing, and the authority with which he's putting in this performance is increasing, and you just wonder where he'll be in a year or so. You know, surely he's not got too much margin for improvement, because if he does improve further, he'll be winning Grand Tours by minutes and minutes.
Well, I spoke to his general manager, the manager, UAE Team Emirates, Machin Fernandez, who is a renowned talent scout and was associated with the Quickstep team for many years. In fact, the development team that he ran produced Remy Cavagna, who won yesterday, but he's now in charge at UAE Team Emirates. And I spoke to him about Pog at the finish. Covered lots of talented young riders, but how does Pogacar compare with some of them?
He's a talent. He's a pure talent. The talent is not the training. It's not the buy in the supermarket. It's not the create of the growing. The talent is the genetic person. And Pogacar is a talent. He's a talent in the junior. He's a talent in the under 23. He's a talent now. He's a pure talent, and belief in Pogacar, the with the sight of the champion, not for the Euro young or old, is for the talent, pure talent.
And have you been surprised still by how well he's performed at the Vuelta?
In my opinion, no surprise. You look back of the program of the Tadej, he's the winner in Algarve, best calendar, no World Tour bus, best rivals, arriving in California, winner, arriving in Basque Country, the best in the Basque Country, helped to the Dan Martin, but his fourth position, but the stronger in the Basque Country. In the Slovenia is the stronger, but is Ulis in the front, leader, respect your teammates, and the stronger in the Slovenia. After arriving in the California, winner.
He's had so much success. How do you manage that? How do you manage his career over the next few years? Because to do what he's won, to win the races he's won already, means his progress has always been forward. At some point, I guess, he will maybe have a disappointment or a setback. How do you think about managing his career long term?
It's important planning the sportive life. And the first time we spoke with the DIA is the first year, 17 maximum days of competition. Second year, starting in the Grand Tours, maybe Giro, maybe Vuelta a España. The 3 year Tour de France. But after the result of this year, speak with it. Maybe stop it. Try to anticipate 1 year of the process, starting in the Vuelta a España for the goals of the YDRC. Maybe the height goals for the Lopez is their rival, but Tadej is an amazing rider.
So he's ahead of schedule.
Yes, he believes a lot in the young talents. It's important. The team believes in the talents for the sportive space. Many times it's the good talents, but it's done the sportive space, done the opportunity. And with Tadej, I believe in that Vuelta with the two leaders, Aru and Tadej, covering all riders for two riders. And after this is the result.
Do you have any theory as to why we're seeing so many young riders, Evenepoel, Bernal, Pogacar, why we're seeing so many young riders win the biggest races?
It's the same question of the member of the first time look at the Remco Evenepoel, what is the talent? Remember, if the junior category of the first year of junior with the Remco is the same sensation, same feeling. is the pure talent. It's different. It's the talent. I don't know why or why I don't know explain what is the for why arriving, but it's the pure talent.
So that was Machin, the manager at UAE Team Emirates. Daniel, another question I have for you about today is Jumbo Visma. Roglic, his last remaining teammate was George Bennett, and for a lot of that stage he was on his own. You know, had the others been really trying to unseat him, there was an opportunity there, especially when Pog went up the road. But he benefited hugely from the fight for the podium among the other teams.
Well, he has throughout this race, hasn't he? He's been isolated on numerous occasions, but such has been the conflicting interests and the competing interests of Movistar and Astana. They've always found a reason to ride, and that happened again today. Interesting on Rog. So we've talked a bit about his contract situation, the fact he's renewed the contract. I think I mentioned earlier in the Vuelta that although it had been reported that a deal was done for a contract renewal with Jumbo Visma, as far as he and his management were concerned, they weren't completely ready to sign the deal. And something obviously changed in the first week or so of the Vuelta. What that was, I'm led to believe, is that he wanted assurances from the Jumbo Visma management and also from Jumbo Visma, the team, that they were coming here as a better outfit, as a stronger outfit, as a team more able to support him than they had been at the Giro. And apparently he had seen enough after about a week or 10 days to say, right, no, let's go ahead and sign this deal, which to all intents and purposes was ready should he have wanted to take them up on it, which he has now.
Well, he will be crowned winner of the Vuelta tomorrow, so that's a huge milestone for that team, really. Their first Grand Tour in their new guise, I suppose. Earlier today, as the stage was going on, I caught up with Orla Shinawi, and we talked about a few things, including the controversy yesterday involving Lopez and Movistar and Roglic. Here we are talking at the finish earlier today. I'm here with Adam Hansen, the Thomas De Gendt of broadcasting.
Not quite as many as Adam Hansen, but I am doing it again, aren't I? My first season of all three Grand Tours.
First season of all three Grand Tours.
I don't get a massage either.
No, I do. as discussed last night. De Gendt, he's faded a little bit, I think, this Vuelta, not being quite as active as he's been in other Grand Tours. What about you, Orla? Are you still on the attack?
Woo, woo, still going! I am, actually.
You're putting it on now. The recorder's on. You're putting it on. A moment or two ago, I saw a very unusual set, a rare outing of a kind of downbeat Orla.
That's not quite true, because I was doing it with energy, wasn't it? Because you said I was downbeat. I wasn't downbeat. I'm still very happy to be here. I just think, and what I was talking about was this finale is just, and again, events always overtake us, and I may be contradicted, but I can't really see it. This finish is just a bit rubbish, really, because
we should point out that we haven't had the finish yet, but we are at the finish.
The finish, well, you put me off saying finish line. Okay, the finish line, the finish spot is a bit rubbish in terms of crowd support, because this is the final Saturday of the Vuelta. It's the last day of GC, and we're in such a remote location. We had to get up at 6:30 this morning to get up here on time, get a shuttle bus up. There's nowhere to park. I've seen so far two Colombian fans, bless them, and that's it. It's just too remote for anyone, and I think that's a real shame, you know, because any Grand Tour is brittle. This Vuelta has been brittle. We've got people, riders on their knees today. James Knox doesn't know if he's going to be able to finish the stage. And I just think they deserve more than that, really, for the final climb. So that's all I was saying. But I was saying it with a smile, wasn't I? No?
Yeah, kind of. But Orla, well, we're still, as so often is the case, we're still sort of digesting yesterday's events. The beef, obviously, between Miguel Angel Lopez and Movistar and Valverde. Movistar issued an apology last night on their Twitter feed. Quite unusual, I thought. And then Lopez apologised this morning for. So everyone's apologised. There were hugs this morning. It was sickening, really, for those of us who wanted that beef to be the story today. It might still be.
Yeah, yawn, yawn. I don't want apologies. I want rivalry on the last mountain day.
I'm sure they still want to beat each other.
Of course, of course. And I fully agree that Miguel Angel Lopez should have apologised, really. He was very, very strong in the words that he used and saying, you know, he wishes he could see the day when Movistar win a race with some class in their heads held high. This from the rider who punched a fan in the Giro, you know. So I think that words come out in the heat of the moment, and he was obviously caught up in that crash and didn't agree with what Movistar did. I mean, we talked about this on the breakaway yesterday, and in our post-stage analysis, the guys, Brian and Bradley, were sort of saying, you know, Movistar were in the wrong, and I think I kind of swayed them the other direction a little bit. So by the time we got to the breakaway, which comes on afterwards, we were all kind of saying, you know what, all of this criticism of Movistar is a little bit over-exaggerated, and we've got a bit of criticism for it. But I stand by it, because these kinds of gentlemen's agreements are part of what we love about the sport, and it's part of the nuance and the subtlety of the sport that gives it all of these extra layers, I think, that make it so much more complicated than it looks on the outside, and that's part of what we fall deeply in love with the sport for. However, it's a gentleman's agreement, you know, and that is only valid for as long as everyone agrees to it. We're in a race. That's the one thing that we do know. The race is on. Movistar, it's very easy for them to say afterwards, this is exactly where we plan to attack. We'd reconned it for hours and hours, and this is where we were going to go, and that shouldn't have changed their game plan. But regardless, I mean, I think they were right to sit up in the end, I guess, but I think I'm probably being swayed by everyone else. But for them to race in those conditions, whether they were right or wrong, I think the way that everyone is categorically slating them yesterday is probably what I find wrong more than anything. And then, you know, when you see that Roglic was drafted back up to the race, you got to think, well, one gentleman's agreement versus a UCI rule that's been broken. Yeah, I mean, there are so many vagaries in this sport, but I wasn't outraged by what they did, to be honest. I wasn't.
That reminds me, actually, we had a question after last night's podcast from a listener. We talked about a lot last night about barrage and the fact that there wasn't a barrage yesterday during the stage. And our listener was asking, what is a barrage? A barrage is when the chief commissar orders all the team cars to stop at the side of the road, to basically remove the team cars from behind the group so that the group coming up doesn't have the assistance of the team cars. And what happened after the crash was there was no barrage, so the team cars were still there, so the riders coming from behind could get through them. And that apparently is one reason why Movistar called off their effort, because it was kind of pointless because the riders were coming back anyway. I think it's tricky. I mean, I agree with you. You know, and I have sympathy for Movistar, who, if that was a strategy, you know, they only had a couple of days left to try and win the Vuelta. They've got two guys up there. You know, Primoz Roglic is still somebody who might be vulnerable in certain situations, as we saw on the crosswind stage the other day. So having seen that vulnerability, the obvious thing for them to do was, in crosswinds, try to split the race. They did it last year as well, actually, on the penultimate day of the Vuelta into Andorra. The penultimate mountain stage into Andorra, when they caught out Simon Yates briefly. So they have form at trying this tactic late on in the race. And if that was their plan agreed at the start of the day, it takes a lot to abandon that plan. And they eventually did, let's not forget, and they did allow the race to come back together. So in the end, common sense prevailed, but it was a situation where if they've got a plan, they think this might be our only chance to try and win the stage. You know, it's very unfortunate for them that crash happened, because they would have executed that plan had the crash not happened, and maybe would have caught out Roglic, who knows.
And I guess in that sense then they were disadvantaged themselves by the crash, because they weren't allowed to go on the attack at all. If you're to look at it as a neutral and you were just wanting to see an exciting, explosive final day, if Movistar had been allowed to continue that attack and they didn't have to sit up essentially because Roglic has been drafted back, you would have been looking at maybe what a minute gap between Roglic and Valverde today. How much more exciting would that be? Because that's bridgeable, that's entirely bridgeable, especially when Roglic could be more easily isolated. He lost Tony Martin yesterday, so he just has five riders around him. I mean, it's Primoz Roglic is looking unbeatable, and he would have to defend a 1 minute 52 lead as much as a 1 minute lead, arguably. You know, if he loses time, he's going to lose a chunk of time. It doesn't look like that's going to happen, but it would give us a lot more to hang on to today, I think.
I must say as well, Orla, that when we discussed this on the podcast last night. We didn't realise that it was James Knox who'd been the first guy to fall. And I only realised that last night when I got some footage from a different angle from a spectator that his front wheel had given out. And I'd been messaging him looking for his audio diary, you know, and we finally heard from him about 9:30. And he said, you know, sorry, I just got to the hotel having been at hospital and I'm having dinner now. When do you need it for? And I didn't realise that he was that badly injured. So I felt a little bit bad about that. And he did then send in his audio diary, incredibly. A little bit late, but, you know, we'll forgive that. And that was, you know, a measure of his commitment to us, because he said he would keep an audio diary every day, and he has done. So thanks to him for that. But it was very unfortunate that that's happened to him. He was riding right at the front of the bunch, you know, where you're supposed to be. It was a greasy descent. His front foot wheel just went from under him. No real fault attached to that at all. And I think he feels really bad about it. He feels bad for having caused a crash that took some other riders out and hurt people. And it might end his Vuelta prematurely. He seemed very downbeat at the start. And not as downbeat as you seemed a few minutes before we started recording.
Oh, give me a break.
He's very pessimistic about his chances. And been watching the stage here and watching his roommate, Philippe Gilbert, really try and nurse him through the stage, which incredible to see somebody of Gilbert's stature dedicating himself today really to helping his teammate who will not be a teammate next year. Yeah, I think that's a real measure of Philippe Gilbert.
Isn't it beautiful to see? And you look at the stage wins that Gilbert has secured in this race, and the one word that's used about him so much in the past few weeks is just how classy he is, you know, from his riding to his mentoring, I guess. And when we've had James and Philippe on the show, they've both been so full of praise of each other, and they're clearly enjoying this experience together. James said to us at the start today that he wasn't sure if he was going to make it until the end of today, and that would be such a huge shame, especially, you know, he crashed out of the Giro. He's done so well in this race. His top 10 is looking fairly comfortable. I can't remember his buffer at the start of today, but it was certainly over a minute.
Several minutes.
So if he hangs on until the end of the day, then he's got a top 10 finish in his first full Grand Tour, which would be amazing. And he's also one of these people who has grown in character and, I guess, stature at home. Thanks to the audio diaries, you know, we've had him on TV and we've had such a wonderful, positive, warm reaction to him every time he's been on. So a lot of people have taken him into their hearts, I think, over the course of this race. So it'd be a very popular top 10 indeed, and it would be devastating for a lot of people, I think, if he were to drop out today. So just hope that Gilbert can shepherd him to the line.
Pressure's on Gilbert. And I've just taken an executive decision to give Gilbert a Pedler de Charme t-shirt. He was, I think, second in our poll. James Knox.
I didn't vote yet, though. Oh, who was next? Actually?
James Knox actually won it. I'm going to send the Pedler de Charme t-shirts to James Knox and Nick Schultz anyway as a thank you for their diaries. And I'll present the one t-shirt I have with me here to Philippe Gilbert. How about that?
Do it. He'll love it.
Will that be the proudest moment of his career, do you think?
Well, you know what? He's now secured how many Grand Tour stage ones? 12? 11? 11?
12, 11. I think.
No, 11. He got two at this Vuelta, so 10th and 11th. 11 stage wins, former world champion, going back to the Worlds again in top form. I think nothing really could top this year other than a Pedler de Charme t-shirt. Probably the wrong size, you know.
Probably not ironed. Definitely not ironed, but I'm confident it might be the right size.
Oh, well, there you go then. There you go. I might wear
it tonight just to give it a good stretch and a kind of body iron.
Oh, lovely. A little bit of Richard Muir sweat on that just as an added bonus. Well done, Philippe. You've earned that.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can still get 25% off all your Science Sport products with the code SISCP25, and we're very grateful to them for their support. We heard from Orla Shinawi there. Daniel, we're back in our bustly bar. When's dinner booked for?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock? Oh, I guess that's only 15 minutes away.
I'm slightly worried about the lighting in our restaurant, though, that we've booked. It's aggressive. I'm very particular about lighting, and the same way I'm very particular about glasses. And the receptacle you drink from, lighting is a major issue for me.
Was there anyone in the restaurant?
Yeah, it's busy enough, and you know, as always in Spain, you sort of go in at half nine and you know, ask if they've got a table, and they sort of, and it looks pretty empty.
They say, already?
Well, and yeah, they say, no, we've got no tables, everything's booked. And you're like, but it's half nine. They say, oh yeah, everyone's arriving in an hour or 2 hours. So, yeah.
Lots of steakhouses here, I think, in Avila. Daniel, one of the big stories today was James Knox and his struggles to finish the stage. He was very pessimistic at the start. I know you spoke to him and I spoke to him as well. Limited eye contact, very sheepish and not optimistic at all that he could even get through the stage. There was some amazing footage during the stage of Philippe Gilbert kind of nursing him and you know, helping him with, you know, even pushing him. I'm not sure that's really allowed, but he did. And I think the fact that he finished owes a lot to Gilbert, his roommate, as well as his teammate. And at the finish, I spoke to Gilbert and Remy Cavagna, who won, of course, yesterday. So let's hear first from Gilbert and then from Cavagna.
An incredible job you did out there helping James.
Yeah, I mean, he crashed really bad yesterday, and yeah, I stayed with him all day, and yeah, we had to close gaps a few times in the first climb. Then we made it, and then yeah, I support him also, like by talking, you know, give him some motivation. And at the end, we pulled a long way. I think the last 50-60 k's, and yeah, I just hope he make it for the top 10.
Well, he didn't seem very optimistic this morning that he would finish the stage at all. Yeah. So you must have made a difference.
Yeah, but I mean, he did. He was pushing on the pedals.
We saw you taking his rain cape and things like that. Quite something for him.
Yeah,
finishing his first Grand Tour to have you acting as his domestic today.
No, sure. But it's the way it is. I think, like in life, when you give, you receive, you know. And I think it's something that a lot of riders should maybe know more, you know, because on a bike, when you give, you receive back, and it's simple a bit to work like that.
And you've been roommates as well, so you got to know him quite well.
Yeah, and I know how deep he went some days, and how much he wanted this top 10, so if you can help someone doing that, you do it.
From stage winner yesterday to helping your teammate try and finish the top 10 today, quite a change for you.
Yes, it was a really hard day, one of the hardest days of my life, but we pulled full gas because James was not in a good day because he crashed yesterday, so we don't know how was this leg, but finally he was limit, but he was strong, and I'm proud of him because he's a really strong rider, and he improved a lot, and I'm really proud of him.
Shows great team spirit in your team that you help each other.
That's why we are the team are so strong, because we help all the time each other, so that's the more important in the team, to help the guys. One day he helped me, one day I helped him, and that's it. We need some guys for help the other, so it's like this. We are the Wolfpack, we are one of the best team in the world, and we try to win all the races.
So that was Philippe Gilbert and Remy Cavagna, the Wolfpack. As Cavagna says, we might laugh at that, but it does seem to have some meaning for the team. The Wolfpack Classic won't leave one of its injured wolves behind.
Apparently. No. And, you know, people, I suppose, rightly made a lot of the fact that Gilbert was helping Knox today, but, you know, it is his job. It's Philippe Gilbert's job on a day like today. What else is Philippe Gilbert going to do on a day like today?
I would suggest that not everybody with Philippe Gilbert's palmarès would have done that necessarily. Do you not think? You don't think there's something about that team that there is this kind of team spirit that they have?
Well, I think it's called being professional. And you know, the job, the team's main goal today probably would have been get one rider in the break with an opportunity to win the stage, and everyone all hands on the pump to get Knox in the top 10. I mean, it's pretty simple, Rich.
A lovely story, Daniel. A lovely story. And you just pour cold water all over.
He's just been a pro. Talking about being a pro, maybe too professional. Have you seen there's a bit of beef, particularly among the Spanish journalists, about Rog's performance in his post-race press conference. People suggesting that it was unbecoming of a Vuelta winner to come in, and essentially he answered about five questions. Someone said that it was three. I think it was more than that. But you know, he's not You know, he's not Brian Sewell, is he, Rog? He's not the greatest of speakers.
There's a guy sitting over there, just at the next table there, Bradley Wiggins. They're recording a rival podcast, him and Matt Stevens. But I remember his press conference when he won the Tour de France 2012, and I also remember Francois Thomas was saying, the best winner's press conference since 1989. And that does matter, you know, because...
It matters to us.
But it matters in the sense that these are the stories that get written. And after Wiggins' press conference, you could write about 50 stories. After Roglic's press conference, like, you're struggling to write a single story.
Yeah, I mean, we had a good story. We had a new version of, a relatively well-known story last night from our colleague Dan Hackenberg. At dinner, didn't we, about how Roglic was taken on by Jumbo-Visma when essentially I can't remember which year it was, he joined Zenit 2015, basically there was a spot free on their roster and it was very late in the day to be recruiting new riders. They didn't know where to turn. They'd had a tip off, Franz Marsen, one of the direct sportifs, had a bit of a tip off a year or so earlier about this Slovenian guy. They didn't really know anything about him, and they didn't do anything at the time. But then when this space was opened up, they said, well, who can we get? Oh, what about that Slovenian chap? And they called Rog on the old dog and bone, and he was on holiday, I think, wasn't he? He was on the beach in
Greece,
and they called him in. They wanted him to do a test, and he came in with this magnificent tan, all body tan. He'd obviously been sunning himself for the past couple of weeks, hadn't ridden his bike for 10 days or so, and they did this physical, a VO2 max test or some kind of physical MOT, and they were bowled over by the results, the best results or some of the best results they'd ever seen in that kind of test, and they took him on. But I asked Richard Plugger, the Jumbo-Visma manager, head honcho, about that today, and he said, I didn't know that he was a special athlete when I first met him, but I knew he was a special man. And I asked Rog about that tonight, hoping that, you know, he might turn into Brian Sewell, and he might give this wonderful he might open the door to his subconscious and tell me why he thought Richard Plugger might have considered him to be, you know.
I did laugh. Dan Hackenberg was complaining on the way down about the fact that Roglic had only answered 5 questions, and I said, why did you think the 6th one was going to open him up, that he was suddenly going to pour forth with all this wonderful lyrical stuff, and that wasn't going to happen. There was almost a disaster for Jumbo-Visma tonight, a late disaster, because the vehicle that was waiting to transport Rog back down the mountain, Richard Plugger unfortunately went off in another vehicle with the key for that vehicle, I'm led to believe.
There was so much beef at the finish. I think you witnessed some beef, I'm going to ask you, but there was big controversy about a cameraman I'm going to ask you about later. There's someone might be kicked off the race tomorrow. We haven't discussed this yet, but I want all the details.
Is this
about
something to do with me getting the last place on the bus?
It's something to do with that bus, but anyway.
Okay, Daniel, let's play out tonight with the Rider Diaries. We've got Nick Schultz first, and then James Knox. And, you know, James Knox was not in a great place at the finish. He'd had a very, very difficult day. He was quite emotional. And I wasn't sure he was going to send us a diary, to be honest, but he has done. He sent us four minutes of his thoughts from the day, and we really appreciate that. We really appreciate the fact that Nick and James have sent diaries in every day. When we asked them at the start of the Vuelta to send diaries, we said, you know, you don't have to do it every day, just when you feel like it. They've done it every single day, and we really, really appreciate that. Rest days as well.
Maybe next year get Rog on?
Rog and Pog. We get Rog and Pog as our rider diarist.
Wow.
No, they've been brilliant. They've shared an awful lot, and their commitment to it has been really impressive. So we're very grateful. So before we play out with the rider diaries, let's say a few thank yous to friends of the podcast. I've lost my place with this, so we may have thanked these people before, I'm not sure. But thanks very much to Jonathan Giftos, Susan Burnett, Nicholas Hill, Paul Greenhall, Alison Ross, Hugo Manners, Glyn Jones, Gordon Wright, and Kevin Whitford.
Michael McCullough, Gaetan Staples, Simon Gilby, Patrick Duquet, Chris Close, Patrick Ducey maybe. Martin Hickman, Heist Studios, Malena Johansson, and Daniel Stevens.
High Studios actually sponsor Cycling Podcast Feminine. That's nice of them. Anyway, let's play out with first Nick Schultz and then James Knox.
Stage 20, second last one. Damn. Brutal day for the essentially the grand finale. The most elevation meters of the whole Vuelta were thrown into today's stage. It was also really, really long, pretty average weather. A little bit chilly at points, some rain, a bit of storming, sort of storming mountains here and there. Just made for a hectic day. Break went straight away with 10 guys, including Damo Housen from our team, up there again, having a little internal competition there with Skabu as to who can get in the most breakaways for the team. So I think Damo comes out on top there. But didn't stop there. We got to the first Cat 1 of the day, one of many, after 15K. And it all kicked off again with a lot of attacks going. Basically the next 60K or so was carnage and non-stop attacks, high-tempo riding, lots of things going on that basically just meant for probably one of the hardest starts to a stage I've ever done, all coming on stage 20 of this race. So that made things hard, but it did eventually settle down. Jumbo Visma got a little bit of control there after the first couple of climbs, and at that point though the peloton must have only been about 60 or 70 riders, so that was making it a long day for the guys that got piped on that first climb. But as I said, it did settle down until about kilometre 120 or 130, where Astana really lit it up again, and things split to shreds. You could really see the fatigue in everyone, and everyone just really wanted to get to the line there. And from there it was the GC battle kicking off, and Pogacar came out on top with the stage win. Incredibly impressive there. He attacked a long way out on the last Cat 1 of the day and held off the peloton going full gas in the valley. So incredibly impressive ride there. And on another note, poor old Noxie there after a hard crash yesterday, really battled through and suffered a lot. Big respect for him today, fighting on the way he did. Certainly would not have been easy physically, let alone mentally, to do what he did. So really sorry to see him drop out of the top 10 there, but I think he can be incredibly proud of that ride. It was really amazing. Just to keep fighting the way he did all the way to the line despite suffering. He's very worthy of the Pedaler de Charme, for sure. I think he's the number one pick. Otherwise, currently on a long transfer to the hotel near Madrid. We've got a few hours in the bus, but it's a nice moment getting to this point, knowing that tomorrow's sort of ceremonial proceedings are coming. It is a very hard last hour or two, but it is a nice feeling to roll into Madrid there, and everyone's sort of almost relieved to get to this point. On a personal note, my girlfriend's at the hotel waiting for our arrival, so really looking forward to seeing her after a long stint away, and I certainly couldn't do this without her support all the time, always being there to talk to in the ups and downs for a race like this. So it's going to be really special to see her tonight, and we'll have a nice dinner, maybe some, I think our chef Nikki's preparing some burgers, so we'll be looking forward to that, and then big sleep in tomorrow before the final parade. Thanks for listening.
over. Really, really hope we've got a nice, uneventful day tomorrow. I don't know. It's been like, feels like five nights out on the trot. And also getting hit by a car all in one go. I'm just emotionally drained, physically wrecked. Just well and truly over this race now. Really left it all out there on the road. Was a tough one. Battling from the start, struggling, after yesterday's crash, just not really any power in the legs and also struggling with pain in the knee and the arm. But I mean, the elbow wasn't bothering me too much, only on the bumpy descents. But yeah, the knee loosened up eventually. It was okay, but it was just a battle from the start. And I got an amazing amount of support. I was getting dropped on the first climb, second climb, third climb, and got brought back to the group by Phil, Remy, Stevie, Eros, and then dropped again on the fourth one after a bit of an easier spell in the middle. And then from there, it was the three of us just doing a chop-off to the finish line, more or less. Phil and Stevie just giving it everything for me just to get through, finish as best I could. And then, actually, a big shout-out, George Bennett. We caught him and he gave us some huge turns as well. We were in a group of, like, 20, but everyone else sat on and just, in the end, just, yeah. Us four chopping through until the final climb, and then as when Phil and Stevie dropped off, a few of the lads from the group got around me, supported me. Nick Schultz was there. Guys I've not really got a relationship in the race, really trying to push me onto the line. Luis Leon Sanchez, Ben O'Connor, a couple of Escudi Murias guys. This was pretty amazing camaraderie, but yeah, I was just broken. I had nothing left to give that last K&R. Could barely turn the pedals. Came excruciatingly close to coming into the last day in a top 10, but yeah, not really disappointed because there's not really a whole lot more I could have done there, or no regrets now. It was meant to be, so. And of course, if 3 weeks ago you'd given me a chance to sign for a 11th place on GC in the end, I would have signed on the dotted line and give my left nut for it. So, I really wasn't expecting this. It's been an amazing race with the team so far. Four stage victories. Just the ambience as well, really an amazing group here. We've got everyone behind each other, everyone supporting each other, and really looking forward to finishing it off tomorrow. Hopefully Fabio's still got some legs left, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's dead, or either way, I don't think we'll be disappointed how it finishes tomorrow. We'll enjoy some drinks in Madrid, but yeah, really appreciate a lot of messages for support and stuff. It's been amazing to have so many people behind me. Was never expecting this, so yeah, it's been a real treat. Been part of the race, and part of the cycling podcast. Hopefully, one more tomorrow. And yeah, thank you, everyone.